This is Disintegration, a special podcast from 1A and the Texas Tribune. I'm Joshua Johnson. In part one, investigative journalists Alexa Ura and Aliyah Swaby of the Texas Tribune reported from East Texas on the efforts of the Longview Independent School District to desegregate. In 1954, the United States Supreme Court declared racially segregated public education unconstitutional. Brown v. Board of Education demanded school districts from across the nation desegregate and declare all white institutions of learning relics. It was time for America to move on. Some districts didn't want to. For almost half a century, the Longview Independent School District was under a federal order to desegregate. In 2018, the district was released from federal oversight, 65 years after Brown versus Board of Education. How did that happen? In part two, we chart that journey. Again, your guides are reporters Alexa Ura and Aliyah Swaby of the Texas Tribune. Today, we start with a key event that takes us back to 2007 and a man who would arrive to build upon the work of the Longview School Board, a man named...
James Edward Wilcox, and I am superintendent of schools for Longview ISD.
You don't get elected to the position of superintendent in Longview. It's a position you have to apply and be chosen for, and something James saw made him toss his hat into the ring for consideration.
I felt like that Longview ISD was underperforming, and it would be a great opportunity to do some wonderful things for kids, and it certainly has been. The student achievement wasn't at the level that I thought it should be. And now, when you go across East Texas, I think we're easily the highest performing district in East Texas, period. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that with a diverse student population. We're still the highest performing district in East Texas, and I think that speaks well for our students as well as our staff.
When we asked him what helped lead to higher achievement in Longview, his response was surprisingly simple.
I think establishing a plan.
The plan was ambitious, and it initially caught some of the other board members off guard. Chris Mack was one of them. He was first elected to the board in 1993.
There's been times where we thought that Wilcox was nuts, okay? I mean, he comes to us with these ideas. Like, James, are you kidding? He came to us one day. Okay, gang, y'all, listen to me. I want to build a meat processing facility. Okay, James, for what? Well, butchers are in high demand. People that work in meat processing are in high demand. There's nothing around here like that. We've got a population of kids that would benefit from that. So I want y'all to approve. It's going to be between $1 million and $2 million. And we're like, really? But it's proven to be one of the best programs we've put together.
As superintendent, James Wilcox was willing to take chances with the creation of programs that prepared and supported students who were not college-bound. James succeeded in appropriating the funds necessary to build the meatpacking facility, more than $2 million. Once it was completed, the board members took a tour of the plant.
We go, and a group of students toured the whole thing, okay? I mean, toured us through the whole thing, A to B. So the animal comes in alive, and the animal leaves in packages, and the kids do the whole thing. And I'm telling you, I would bet a lot of money that those kids that showed us through that facility, had they not been a part of a program like that, they'd be dropouts. I really believe that. You could just tell they were just that kind of kid. You know, I'm not trying to label people, but I just know that those kids were not going to be, mathematicians probably. You know, they weren't going to excel in, they're going to excel in doing something with their hands, and there's nothing wrong with that. I make a living with my hands, not my brain, okay? So there's nothing wrong with that. So I believe that we're always going to need welders, and we're going to need plumbers, and we're going to need electricians, and those are jobs that are not going to be replaced by computers.
It wasn't just about providing a path for success to students who weren't college-bound. Superintendent James Wilcox and other board members also needed the community to approve a $266.9 million bond. That was going to take some work.
They traveled to town halls across Longview, desperately seeking support for the bond that would allow them to overhaul schools throughout the district, ensure that all schools were in excellent shape, and cut back on how often they had to bus students across town in order to adhere to the federal court order. Here's Troy Simmons, who served on the board since 1985. He's talking about the 2008 vote on the bond.
And there was a concerted effort on that Saturday, the day of voting, to defeat it, and they damn near did. But that tells you how deeply embedded this stuff is, that I want my kids educated, I don't give a damn about your kids. And that's what that says. I don't want my taxes to go up because I don't have kids in school. So I don't see a need in me rebuilding all these schools for these kids that don't look like me, don't come from where I come from. Why should I spend my tax money doing that? Our bond issue passed by 17 votes. 17 votes.
And even though the vote barely passed, the school district was able to build 8 brand new schools, completely renovate 3 others, and upgrade technology throughout the district. There were still underlying issues, though.
One of the more prominent things that we saw that would stick out to us in the school system was that we'd have a log jam as freshmen. We'd have these ninth grade kids who would come out of middle school and never could get past the ninth grade. So you have these 16, 17, 18-year-old ninth graders, right? And everybody's going, what's going on with that? Well, it's pretty clear what was going on with it. They didn't have a proper foundation.
So the district decided on a non-traditional path.
Here, we have a Montessori program that is available to virtually every kid that comes into the district. And that, to me, changes public education if you can get those kids in, make parents understand the importance of it.
Montessori schools don't teach kids in the way we're used to thinking of when it comes to the classroom. Instead of a teacher working from a pre-planned lesson plan in a heavily structured environment, Montessori focuses more on self-directed and hands-on learning. The Montessori Way started off as a pilot program before becoming the underlying basis for teaching students of the district. And it was incredibly successful at boosting the number of Black children at one of the best performing schools in the district, a school called Hudson Pep.
Our preparatory enrichment program, Hudson Pep, has gone from a school that was 28% minority, 72% Anglo, to about 40% minority. Okay? 44, and I could be off on that a little bit. So we've increased the number of kids who are in our accelerated traditional elementary schools. We've increased the number of minority kids that are there. We did that through a pilot Montessori program that we started that showed that our kids could be educated well enough that they could pass the entrance exam to the PEP program without ever changing the requirements for entrance, for being into the program. And so that started us on this road of trying to move Montessori into all our elementary schools, which is what we did when we rebuilt our physical plant. We virtually rebuilt our physical facilities here in a bond issue. And so we moved the Montessori program to all our elementary schools but one.
There was a holdout, a lone school that didn't agree with the Montessori curriculum, Johnson McQueen Elementary.
Should we be reading anything into the fact that they're the only school that has their standalone pre-K program? Or pre-K and kindergarten?
You can read into it just what it says. The parents in that area wanted a standalone pre-K program. Now, you make it make sense to me when Montessori is the most well-known preparatory program worldwide. Why? That cost, if you're going to pay tuition for it, you're going to pay $12,000 to $14,000 a year at somebody that's running a private Montessori school. So why would you not take advantage of that? So I think you can read into it what it says. They wanted a standalone kindergarten program.
Though some district officials insisted parents at Johnson McQueen wanted a traditional pre-K and kindergarten program, for Troy, the resistance amounted to a figurative foot in the door.
The district poured $31 million into the East Texas Montessori Prep campus, right in the middle of the district, so Longview's youngest students could all start their education with the same educational foundation. But in the end, the board and Wilcox agreed to allow Johnston McQueen Elementary to keep its traditional program. They were too afraid of white parents taking their kids and leaving the district, which would hurt their efforts to continue desegregating the schools.
Superintendent James Wilcox had a plan, and it seemed to be working. Take Ned Williams Elementary, for example.
Ned Williams has close to the same student performance scores as Hudson Pell. It is 99% minority. It is 97% free and reduced lunch. And yet its test scores and its distinctions are right there with Hudson Pell.
But Troy Simmons says racist attitudes held tight.
You know what people say? The kids, the principal out there is cheating. Those kids can't be doing that. What does that say? If now these little black and brown kids who come from broken homes, who come from poor families, are testing like the little rich kids who are dropped off every day, they're testing at the same level. So they can't be as good as my kids, so they got to be doing something wrong. They got to be cheating. We got to be giving the answers. What does that say?
Still, with change came a faint ray of hope. Meredith Richards is an assistant professor of education policy and leadership at Southern Methodist University. She analyzed school segregation data and told us that Longview Independent School District made more progress with integrating black kids into schools and providing more access to equitable education in the years following 2008 than in the 15 years prior. That's a huge and marked improvement.
It was this success, among others, that led Superintendent James Wilcox and the board to petition the federal court in 2014 for the Longview School District's release from certain parts of the federal desegregation order. If Longview School District could take that step, it would say a lot about how far it had come. But it also would raise questions about how far it still had to go.
This is Disintegration, a special podcast looking at segregation and desegregation of schools in Texas. I'm Joshua Johnson. In our third and final part, Texas Tribune reporters Aaliyah Swaby and Alexa Uda discover the up and downsides of Longview's Big Leap Forward. Unshackling itself from a segregation order from what felt like another era would, of course, send a signal. And it was perhaps natural, too. Who wants to be in charge of anything that's subject to oversight from folks who don't know your community or understand the needs of the kids growing up there? But as we know, it takes a village.
I was hoping that there would be enough resistance in our community that we wouldn't have people trying to roll back those progressive things that we've done. But clearly in the era of Trump, nothing is sacred anymore.
That's next time on Disintegration, a podcast from the Texas Tribune and 1A from WAMU and NPR.